Today is Friday. It's November 11th, 2016. I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, portions of which can often be heard on my Saturday show at 1:30 on WGN Radio.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune Editorial
Board. I'm Eric Zorn, the chastened columnist from the Chicago Tribune. I write Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Chastened, he's chastened.
I'm chastened.
Three days ago, candidate Donald Trump became president-elect. Donald Trump, hard to believe I'm saying those words. You have, for the past three mornings, woken up with that feeling where you say to yourself right off, I can't believe this is happening. That may be a pleasant thought for you or a terrifying one, but for the past three nights, protests have erupted across the country, including Chicago, at Mr. Trump's downtown tower. Earlier this week, Eric and I posted a Mincing Rascals podcast the day after the election. In that, Eric was inconsolable. Across the country, images of racial, religious, and gender-based intolerance have been popping up, too. School counselors are dealing with anxious students. Letters are being sent home to parents to ensure them that their schools are safe places. President Obama met for 90 minutes with Mr. Trump yesterday. Their show of grace and civility was reassuring to the nation. It was a performance for which Mr. Obama has already been nominated for an Academy Award. So let's, now that the dust has settled a little bit, start with you, Steve. What strikes you the most about what's happened in the last few days?
Honestly, remember several weeks ago I said that I couldn't imagine Donald Trump being president, and then I was starting to realize that it could happen. Now that it's happened, and I mean this seriously, I am having a hard time grasping it. I haven't, and I don't mean about that he's going to be a good president or a bad president or his policies or any of that, but I'm just picturing Donald Trump calling the NBA champions, or I was texting with my son because he saw Obama at the Tomb of the Unknowns on Veterans Day years ago, seeing Donald Trump there. I really don't save your tweets and emails. I don't want to read them anymore, but I'm having a hard time picturing that sort of leader of the United States.
Those are ceremonial.
I know they are. They're, and maybe inconsequential, or maybe they are. I'm just saying that I just don't see it. I'm having a hard time with it. I mean, I know it's true. He won. It's just hard for me to grasp in that way.
He looked pretty awkward in those meetings with President Obama. I thought he looked nervous, out of his element, not surprisingly. But there he is in the Oval Office with all of the Washington, D.C. press corps, you know, where you can't even, you just hear the of all the cameras clicking.
And they're all using the same picture. You notice how they're all using the one where Trump is like leaning in and shaking his hand and Obama's looking away like, okay, mom, I'll shake his hand.
I think the way they frame that is really important. Some of the video that they showed on TV, I just described as reassuring. But then when I did see how USA Today, CNN, et cetera, were posting it, they had an editorial decision to make there, didn't they? I'm sure there was one that showed them smiling, one that showed President Obama looking away, one that shows Donald Trump looking, you know, out of his element. I mean, you can almost position that any way you want.
I have a hard time seeing Trump in these moments of crisis where you have to have the president come on and give a speech where there's been a terrorist attack or a national tragedy like a Hurricane Katrina.
I think that's kind of what I was speaking to.
Seeing him,
too.
I mean, you know, I can see him doing the rituals, going to the Tomb of the Unknowns and so on. I have a harder time imagining how he will handle crises.
Well,
that's one of the things I'm worried about, actually.
It's a transition. Hillary was a bad candidate, could have been a capable administrator, a president. Donald Trump was a great candidate, but he's going to have to figure out how to be president. He has to stop telling lies. He's not on the campaign trail anymore, and he has to stop defensively tweeting. I mean, there he was at early this morning firing off defensive tweets at the protesters.
He was?
Yeah.
I thought they took his phone away from him.
So
here's the thing.
Back.
So, John, yesterday after the meetings in Washington, and I'm going back and forth, I'm like, you know what? People say he's a good guy. The people who know him, he's going to, you know, make these decisions, and it's going to be okay. It's mature. We're going to grow into it. And then I see he's tweeting, blaming the media for the protest, and then saying, unfair. He's like,
unfair exclamation
unfair.
Point.
What?
Yeah.
There's no more fair, mister. You're the president of the United States. Unfair.
I just want him to talk about how the election was rigged again.
We'll
really?
Talk a little bit, Kristen. I mean, so what has been running through your mind the last couple days?
I mean, I was I was surprised. I did not think that he was going to win going into the evening. I believed a lot of the polls. I did not want to see him win, but he did. And so all of the, I was just kind of indifferent about both of them when I was standing in the voting booth. But at the same time, you know what? Get it together, people. You know, there was all this worry that if Trump didn't win, there were going to be riots. And you guys talked about it on this program. People are going to get their guns and they were going to go in the street. Well, guess what? They're not the ones going in the street. Now it's you have all these riots in Portland. You have people taking to the streets here, breaking business windows. You had a woman, lovely photograph circulating around Facebook of a far lefty Hillary Clinton supporter defecating on a picture of Trump in the middle of one of these rallies.
I haven't seen that yet.
Don't.
I'm not going to look
it's
for it.
It's very
if that's okay
disgusting.
With you.
Right. Well, yeah. But back when we talked about this, Trump was going to be blamed for all of the crazy stuff that his people were going to do. So now do we blame Hillary Clinton
there's
for all
a difference.
Of her? I knew you were going to say that. Let's hear it.
Well, what is it? What was I going to say?
That there's a difference.
What is the difference?
You're saying there's a difference.
I am saying there's a
difference. Yes, I'm waiting to hear what the difference
Steve,
is.
Steve, what's the difference?
One of the candidates was speaking in a way that encouraged it and the other wasn't. Now, they're both bad.
But Trump has not been.
During the
has
campaign,
been,
he was.
During the primary, he would say flippant things during rallies. My point is the election is over. They have both called for a peaceful transition. Her supporters are the ones out there being just
and
acting
bad.
Like animals.
They're not also that they're not armed, probably, which is.
Well, we don't. Whatever.
They're probably
anyway,
not.
But, we can move on.
And I have to say, I don't understand these protests exactly. I understand that people are upset, but it's like the time for them to have gotten their act together and mobilized was not after the damn election.
Someone said they should have been canvassing up in Kenosha.
Yeah, what the
on
hell?
Monday,
no one agrees with their, probably shares their feelings more than I do, but this is a really bad moment. But for God's sake, protest? I mean, one of the briefs against Trump was that he was going to refuse to accept the democratic process. And so these people are out, they're not accepting the results of an election.
No, they're not. That's not true. That's not true. They're not saying
not
that it was rigged or that he's not the president.
They're saying not
well,
my president.
You know what they mean by that, Eric. I think we need to give everybody a few days, my goodness, to process this. I mean, if they're angry and they take to the streets, is that so bad?
It is if they're doing damage to businesses.
Oh, well,
and
I'm
like
sorry
that.
If your store window got cracked. I mean, that happens.
Williams.
Have you seen the
no,
pictures
really.
From Portland?
John, what
Come
would you
on.
Be saying? Honestly, would you be saying
exactly.
this? I mean, I have to. Kristen and
oh,
I seldom
boy,
agree,
Eric.
But I agree. But I think if these were Trump people out breaking windows and defecating on pictures of Hillary, we would be aghast, and we should be aghast at that kind of stuff. I think that these people need to be that. People who feel as I do about this need to make sure that they stay focused, they stay organized, they support organizations that are imperiled, that they send the right messages. But I don't know that out chanting "Not my president" and it does anything at this point.
It's like filing a lawsuit before damage has been done, right? You can't do that until you can prove harm. Wait till he does something and
what
then
do you
mobilize
all make?
And then go out and do it.
What do you make, though? I asked this on the radio the day and I get quite mixed reaction. How real is the anxiety that students are feeling and minorities are feeling and Muslims are feeling? I referenced at the beginning of this podcast the hateful signs and displays towards them now. I'm not blaming that on Trump, but I'm saying that there is a culture that he fostered on the campaign trail that's bearing fruit now, and this is part of it. Are we fanning those flames and exaggerating it? Is that real? What's your reaction to all of that, guys?
I have a friend who's a college counselor at a predominantly Hispanic high school, and she was there in the days after the election, and she came away with the feeling that half of the kids there were afraid that their parents were going to be deported.
And I got to say, I think that some of their fears are quite valid. I also have to say that if you look at the results, you see that Trump did better among Hispanics than Romney did. And that this idea that the Hispanics were going to come out and vote massively for Clinton turned out to be one of the
No, but that's missing the point here, Eric. I mean, so how legitimate, like, for instance, Donald Trump said that there's going to be a religious test for Muslims. He's going to build a wall and he's going to throw the immigrants out, those that are here illegally. I can see how that would send a shockwave of anxiety through all of these populations now that he's the president-elect.
I wish that he would come out. I wish that he would come out in these days now and make some statements about some of the things that are going on and to clarify what his intentions are. Because seriously, when you say that, you say he has walked back that, and I don't trust him at all.
Walked back what?
He's walked back. Well, no,
all of those things you just mentioned.
Well, all the things you just mentioned, he walked back. He said he's going to go after criminal aliens. That's his whole. He wants to go about people who have committed crimes, who are here without documentation. Those are the people he wants out. And the other ones, he seemed like he was going to say, "Well, we'll figure that out. We'll negotiate that once we get to that," which they never will. Get to that point.
I agree that there. If I were in that situation, I would be worried. I mean, there's no question he campaigned on a deportation force. We're going to do it humanely. Whatever. I never believed that that would really happen. The American people would not stand for a deportation force tearing families apart. But I will point out, as I have in the past, Hispanics living illegally, or not just Hispanics, anyone living here illegally in this country has been dealing with the Obama administration for 8 years that has deported more people than the previous administration via executive order, and most of them for nonviolent drug crimes. Go look at the research from nonpartisan organizations like Pew.
Well, props to Obama then,
well,
right?
But I'm just saying, if you're expecting a great deal of change, I don't think the focus...
No. But all right, so maybe Donald Trump will or won't do anything differently than is already being done. But people are acting on that promise. They feel safer now to come out with hateful rhetoric and images because Donald Trump has fostered
that. Now you're talking about switching gears. But I am. He's pivoting.
Okay.
But what he's talking about is are all these scenes from high schools all over the country where students are walking down the halls carrying Trump-Pence signs and scrawls on walls, make America white again, whites only, scrawls on bathroom. And there's a victory parade apparently today in North Carolina by the Klan, however many of those people there are there. But this kind of thing he has, and this is one of the things that really bothers me about him, is that his campaign, I don't know what he is in his heart. I think he's such a fraud. I don't know what he actually believes, but he has given lots of solace and comfort and encouragement to those kind of people. I mean, why would the Klan never endorses anybody, and they endorsed him.
All right, let's start within a couple of things that he has said he will do. Tell me how important it is that we call him on it. We'll start with the build the wall, and Mexico's going to pay for it. Was that a metaphor, or is there supposed to be a wall? What should we expect?
Look, if I were a Donald Trump supporter, I would expect a wall paid for by Mexico with a big, beautiful door. He never really backed down from that. Some of his surrogates, when I was at the Republican National Convention, tried to make it sound like it was a metaphor. He just wants stronger border security. Then he turned around during his speech, 10 hours later, and said, we're building a wall. So if there's no wall, that's going to be a huge failure of what he promised.
What about a special prosecutor?
But let's say if there is – I'm sorry, John, I want to talk
–
Let's say there is no wall. How are the Democrats going to capitalize on it? Are they going to run around saying, hey, you said there's going to be a wall and there's not?
Work for them. Look at his supporters. They will hold him accountable if there is no wall. They will.
I want Dick Durbin to propose the bill. I can just see a Democrat saying, fine. I think there's a lot of people with this attitude of like, and it's not just to the president, but to the Republican Congress now. Really? That's what you want? Okay, fine. Go ahead. Let's see you do it. Let's see how easy that is. Build your wall. Let's see how that works and what it costs.
No, I think what the Democrats are going to look at and what people are going to really look at is his main promise. Aside from the wall, and the wall is actually related to trade and it's related to jobs. And essentially, what his promise was that he was going to, when he talks about making America great again, there may be some racial code words in there and some misogynist code words in there. But what he's really talking about is this era where you didn't have to have a college education to get a good job and make good money. And a lot of those industries, the manufacturing, the mining, all things, those things are, and steel, all that other stuff has been offshored or is. Technology has hurt them. So you've got these communities, these groups of people who are hurting. Admittedly, they're hurting. The Democrats did not address them very well. Trump promised them that he's going to bring back that kind of economy. And that's where I think you're going to see the great disappointment. I think that when he managed to say, well, we look at the wall and I would have had to raise your taxes too much, so I'm not going to do that. But I really think that that's going to be – when we look at Trump's presidency in 2 years from now and 4 years, obviously, if he runs again – we're going to look at those jobs things. Did he make life better for the middle class, which is what he promised?
He did, and I think it's not just different trade deals. I mean, I think TPP is dead. I think the Iranian nuclear deal is going to get a tougher look. Republicans control the House and Senate, too, so I sort of agree with that sentiment. Do it. No excuses now. You don't like the tax loophole that Trump used? Fix it.
The carry forward?
Yes, or all of the, there's a conservative side of the Republican Party that doesn't like corporate welfare either. So great, now's your chance. Fix it. Fix Medicare. Fix entitlement reform.
Healthcare.
Fix healthcare. Do something with Obamacare. I mean, there is absolutely no excuse. They have 2 years to get this done before the next House election. And now it's on them. And I think
there's one where you go, okay, be careful what you ask for. You said you want to fix the Obamacare plan. Fine. Make it affordable. Lower everybody's premiums, but have universal care for people, too.
22,
I want to see that plan.
22 million people.
That's not going to happen.
22 million people have insurance now who didn't before.
Because it's heavily subsidized by us. And that, those subsidies are
going to be. But I don't disagree, Kristen. That needs to be fixed. But all I'm saying is you're going to go to 22 million people and say, we're taking your health care insurance. You know,
no, you're not. You're going to say, you're going to go to 22 million people and say you're going to have health insurance, but somehow your premiums are going
to
go down.
You're going to go to... Well,
you know,
that's why it was broken in the first place. Ryan has a plan that is not completely repeal. It keeps parts of the plan that people like. And I do think there has to be a fix. I mean, you can't look around and say that Obamacare has been this wild success.
As if
I'm sorry, John, I keep interrupting you. But and I've said this before, obviously, I had surgery this summer. I now am marked with a pre-existing condition.
Yes.
That's big. That's big
I
to
have
me.
One too.
And that's big to, you know, a couple of hundred Americans, I would think. That's part of Obamacare. How are you going to get rid of that?
You're not. That's what I'm saying. They're going to keep. There's no way they're going to get rid of that. And in fact, if Republicans, when they controlled all three, the House, the Senate, and the presidency, when insurance companies started instituting pre-existing conditions and caps of $1 million, if they would have just fixed those things, we probably would have never had Obamacare. But it was the fact that you had all these uninsured people, pre-existing conditions, anything from like acne to something like your surgery, and then you couldn't even get coverage if you could afford it. So they do need to fix Obamacare. It's not working in the way it was supposed
and
to.
And I think we all agree with that, right? I mean, what do I care what Obamacare is? If you can give me insurance for my 24-year-old and I don't get disqualified for a pre-existing condition and there's portability, I hope they do anything you guys want. If you can make it better, who cares who does it,
and
right?
Of course, one of the things that's happened in the last 6 years is that the Republicans have refused to try to tweak Obamacare to I mean, they didn't want to fix it. They voted, more than 50 times to repeal it.
Right.
But I think there were some fixes they could have done if they had all gotten
together.
And tried to fix it together.
They wanted it to be part of the president. They wanted to have a Republican president elected in 16.
Are you, though, kind of intrigued by this whole first 100 days thing? I mean, so he said he's going to get the wall going, not built in the first 100 days. But he did say in the first 100 days that he would appoint a special prosecutor to further investigate Hillary Clinton.
He did say that?
Should he? And
but not,
will...
not in the last day.
Oh, okay. That was before the election.
You know, I was at in Minneapolis. They were chanting "Lock her up" the Sunday before the election. 15,000 people. The crowd was so hysterical to see Donald Trump at an airport hangar that they were stopping their cars on I-35W. Think the Dan Ryan, parking them there, climbing over fences and running thousands of them to the airport hangar where he had made sort of an impromptu stop. I mean, it wasn't announced days in advance. And they were chanting, "Lock her up." And he never said, "No, we're not going to do that." He promised that and never backed away from it. He had a special prosecutor.
I really hope that he comes out and says he's not going to lock her up. Chris Christie has hinted that they're not going to do it.
Giuliani as well. Giuliani's saying, "Well, there's the rule of law."
Yeah, Giuliani was really hedging on it. I think it would just be so toxic to an already toxic situation for them to.
Oh, I don't argue that, Eric. But he promised he would. I'm just asking you if he should follow up on this promise people voted for.
He didn't actually say that. I don't think. I think he came close to it. He called her, you know, crooked Hillary a million times. And also, by the way, Bernie Sanders supporters at the Democratic National Convention were also the ones screaming, "Lock her up." So there was cross-pollination of groups of people who think that she deserved to be, that she got off easy.
Again, one candidate was fostering it and encouraging it, and the other was getting votes out.
Bernie Sanders never nodded and saying, "That sounds good to me."
No, but again, I always sit in this chair and try to defend the people who voted for Trump because I understand where they came from. I have not defended what he said, but I have defended what the movement was all about. I get it. And that's the distinction that that I am making.
Well, yeah, I understand that.
This segues into something when Kristen says that this self-flagellation on the part of a lot of people in the media in the last couple of days, like, what did we get wrong? We got it so wrong. I don't think that we got it all that wrong. I mean, she won the popular vote by 1%, and the polls said she was going to get it by 3 or 4. If about 1 in 100 people had voted differently in 2 out of 50 states, if one Trump supporter had to change their vote to Clinton in 2 states, we'd all be talking today about how we nailed this and how what this country means. I mean, it's seriously, most people, the pollsters, called the election wrong, but we didn't get some massive sense of like what was going on out there wrong.
Well,
I don't think.
But she was leading in every poll, and she was leading in every battleground state poll.
Yeah, they were all within the margin of error.
They all went together. Now, how about this? And I think there are really good arguments against this, Kristen. But
she's warming up now.
The elections director in Milwaukee said today that there were 41,000. He thinks that the voter ID law in Wisconsin suppressed the vote there. There were 41,000 fewer votes in Milwaukee or Milwaukee County, I'm not sure which, this year than there were 4 years ago. And he's attributing that to the voter ID law that you showed there, which would have an impact. Now, I think in general, Democrats didn't show up around the country as much as they did 4 years ago. But, you know, you just wonder if those laws did have some sort of
agreeing with Donald Trump that the system was rigged.
No, I'm saying
now it's rigged against Hillary.
It's not rigged. I mean, it's an upfront law. Rigging implies something underground or behind the closed doors. These are
if laws are suppressing voter turnout or making it more difficult for that constituency to vote, sounds rigged to me.
Well, I think those laws are passed to suppress votes. Absolutely.
I don't think that anything that really you could have done with absentee voting or voting on the spot, registering on the spot, would have suppressed what was actually a huge movement. You had so many people voting for the first time. I saw it in my own voting booth. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we can say, only we did this and if only we did that. And as far as the media goes, I mean, just speaking from my newspaper, we ran the number of articles and commentary and opinion that we published was heavily anti-Trump every day. I had a reader who basically sent me a compilation every week of all of the anti-Trump commentary pieces from outside, you know, not within the building, but also, you know, he didn't get a single newspaper endorsement. So there was some misreading going on here among the media. And to say
why should newspaper endorsements track? I mean, you don't want newspaper endorsements to track public sentiment, do you?
Well, I mean, I think I'm not suggesting that we should have endorsed him. We did not. And I don't disagree that no other papers did. But just the idea that all these other Americans found him credible and the media found him so uncredible, there's a gap there.
And it's not just the media. It's the members of his own party. I mean, this has never happened before in our lifetime, right?
We have leaders
of his party publicly saying, it can't be. It can't happen.
Our governor wouldn't say his name.
Well, that's really. I mean, at one point, although he eventually used his name, Paul Ryan said the candidate, and that was the week of the election. He wasn't using his name in one very well, you know, in highly publicized instance.
So does he?
He said, I'm going to vote for the candidate. He said.
Steve Bannon is being talked about as chief of staff.
No.
Well, I mean, he is.
I don't believe some of the stuff that's been coming.
Oh, Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon is the Breitbart guy.
Breitbart guy.
I know.
The
guy
who hates. So my question then is: Paul Ryan still the speaker in 8 months? I think he will be. I think Trump hates people until he doesn't have to hate them, and then he loves them.
He knows he needs Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan is not going anywhere. He was given a crap sandwich, and if you ask me, he's done his best to deal with it. And nobody knows the budget better than Paul Ryan. Yeah. Nobody knows the intimate details of all of these policies that I just ran through: tax reform, entitlement reform, moving poverty grants to, you know, states and as a form of block grants. He needs Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan's not going anywhere.
I did want to, though, dovetail on something you were saying, Steve or Eric, and that is how we missed this election. All of the people and things we take a lot of cues from, like newspaper editorials or a couple hundred of the high-ranking Republican officials, previous Republican presidents.
Podcasts.
broadcasters, talk, commentators, podcasts, or for that
so
matter, like Hollywood and music stars. You know, when 25,000 people at a Beyonce concert are all cheering for Hillary Clinton, you think at some point all of that's going to matter. People, you know, do subscribe to newspapers. They do like Beyonce. They do like Alec Baldwin movies, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's not true.
I said Alec, not his brothers. It's amazing how much firepower there was pointing away from Donald Trump, and people found the way to still vote for him. So then you're watching the numbers that night. And you see these states going red, red, red. I was in a group of people, and they were literally groaning. It was incredulous to them. And then they started to show the markets, and the futures were down 400, 700, 800 points. And, you know, I got it wrong about who was going to win the nomination. I got it wrong about who was going to win the election. I would have bet the House again that the market would be down 1,000 points.
Right. And bounced right back.
It set record highs.
But there also
it's been up 700 points in 2 days.
Now, I talked to a guy on the business lunch who said that the correction was all that night, that the futures was the reaction, and it's already back from that. But there are others saying that we're still in for a pretty steep decline in coming weeks.
And
so we'll see.
Predicated on what, Steve? On Trump becoming president,
yes,
or his policies taking effect?
I think him becoming president, yeah, before the policies. But, you know, like you said, we've been wrong about everything. And let's be wrong. Maybe he's going to – wouldn't it be great if he's a very good president?
Yes. I mean, yes, yes.
I thought it was interesting that in his victory speech on Wednesday morning, I guess, the only thing he really talked about, aside from the usual things that one says, was an infrastructure program.
Right.
He didn't talk about deporting people. He didn't talk – he said we're going to rebuild our roads and bridges – knowing probably that was something that was going to just, you know, ring chimes in the hearts of Democrats and certain Republicans, especially if the money's going to go to their districts. We need infrastructure programs in this country. We have not been spending enough on infrastructure. It will increase jobs.
Cost us money.
It will cost a lot of money, and that may be a sobering moment for our Republican friends who realize they're going to have to raise some money to do this. But That's I'll bet you can get a lot of people on both sides of the aisle pulling on those.
And
doors.
That fueled Wall Street on Tuesday as well. Caterpillar,
yeah, no,
and other construction stocks.
Well, sure, that lower corporate taxes, repatriation of money, maybe that comes back. Lower income taxes. I mean, I can see how Wall Street reacted. But I just thought the specter, the uncertainty of him was going to just drop things like a lead balloon, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, I was getting frantic texts from friends like, our retirement fund is going to go.
You know, I already did 2009 once, and I didn't want to do that again.
I really thought about that, Eric. I was factoring in a 10% drop. You know, I was like, well, maybe this is going to add a couple more years to before I retire.
I have to do more more podcasts.
John, you watched it. Did you have a little election party?
Yeah.
Oh, John.
Listen to his voice.
Oh, John.
Oh, no. Did everybody, like, cry and weep and you,
was this part,
you
was
had,
this,
like, therapists on the way out? Did you guys go to a safe space? Like, what happened?
Kristen is patronizing you.
No, I'm just trying to be funny. Maybe it's not funny.
What was it a listener event?
It was a private party.
I'm just picturing all these little cocktail weenies and dough that went uneaten, and
we had it catered, Steve. We spent money on this thing
by the catering company that you raved about a few weeks ago.
So we had food, and we had wine, and we had light blue colored cocktails, and we had a cardboard Hillary cutout.
Wow.
And I said to my wife a long time ago, long before we decided to do this, I said, we don't want to throw a loser party. And there was a point as the election was ratcheting down that I thought, oh, God, you know, like when James Comey came out, I thought, oh, this, maybe we could cancel the party. But then that Sunday before the election, he said, nothing there, folks. And I felt buoyed by that. And people were sad and they left early. I have now enough food for 50 people for 3 days in my refrigerator.
We'll be right over.
Well,
it's not about me, though. You know, boy, there's a first world problem. So my cocktail party didn't go so good.
Too much food in my refrigerator.
The media.
I know. Too much milk and honey.
Woe is me.
So here's the last thing we should do then. What advice, what do you want to see Donald Trump do in the first 100 days or 2 years? I mean, what advice do we have for him? And it could be something small or something large. I'll start. Stop wearing the hat. You don't need that anymore. Make America Great Again was a great campaign. It was the greatest campaign slogan of all time. But you can take the hat off. And I would say, don't prosecute Hillary Clinton. Pull down all and stop lying. That sounds mean-spirited on my part, but really, he on the campaign trail, not telling the truth was so effective for him. But now there'll be greater consequences to your words and actions, and you really have to narrow down on truthful speech. Those are three things I'd like to see him do right away.
I'll go. Okay. You want to go next?
No, go ahead.
Because I would add to that. I would like to see him speak out, not in his first 100 days, but now. Against racism and against this treatment. I want him to, and he can put it however he wants. I mean, there was this incident in Chicago where some African-American men beat up a white guy and were yelling Trump voter or whatever they were yelling. I mean, that was deplorable also. I mean, I think he needs to come out and talk about that. And again, not prosecuting Hillary Clinton. He should stop tweeting as well.
You know, we didn't talk about this. I thought we might. Tweeting. I don't want him investigated either. You know, the Trump University suit's coming up. There are going to be all of these things.
You don't want him investigated further. What do you mean? That's not Hillary's doing. That's not a political action.
I know, but I'm saying that administrations and leaders get derailed by flea bites. And I think that's, you know, I'm sorry, Hillary Clinton's email was a bit of a flea bite. The investigations during the administration, I don't want to see him hobbled with those unless there are things that he does now that cause a serious harm.
Do you want to see his income tax? Should we still hold him to that, Steve?
Never.
Well,
see
I would love to see it, but I'm just saying I don't think there should be, you know, lawsuits to force him, and I just don't think that's going to help anything.
Okay.
What I would like for him to do is to do what he thinks is right for the country, not what's going to get him applause.
I had one more thing I wanted to add, but Kristen, you go ahead.
I just want him to shut up. I really do. I agree with Eric. We need to address the racial uprisings and the riots and all of that. But I think a surrogate could do that. I really want him to be quiet. Stop gloating. Get off of social media. Shut up for once in this campaign and just listen to the people around you, because now he's going to be surrounded, I hope, by good advisors. And I would like over the next 100 days to not hear much from him.
It's interesting. How about you? One last thing, Eric?
I forgot what it was. I'm in an oops moment. I was too busy listening to Kristen.
Let's close with something you're recommending, something to watch, listen to, read, or consume. I've got a lot of Indian food in my refrigerator and some blue cocktails. I'm recommending that.
Yeah.
How about you, Steve? Any recommendations?
Yes. Escape to the 50s and 60s. I've been watching The Crown on Netflix.
Yes.
And it's a story. It's the...
Really? That's like 60 episodes.
No, it's not.
It's going to be.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, there's only 10 now.
See,
I've heard it's excellent.
It's Princess Elizabeth and then Queen Elizabeth in her early years, where all of the backstabbing, yelling, and damage was done inside the palace.
Is it better than
not
Downton
on the balcony?
Abbey? Better than Downton Abbey?
Well, it's just different. It's more. It's historical. You know. So you know Winston Churchill, John Lithgow was Winston Churchill very good. So I've just been binging on that.
I have a perfect segue, if I may.
Yes, you may.
Read Aaron Schock's indictment, congressman from Illinois.
Oh, I was hoping to talk about
Abbey.
That.
We'll save.
Hilarious.
Yeah, we'll wrap up. We will save that for another time. But if you think we've gotten, you know, we've kind of like crept along and making sure politicians understand they can't spend their campaign funds on personal use, and we've had all these people march to prison doing it. You had Jesse Jackson buying Michael Jackson, or I'm sorry. Yeah, yes. Jesse Jackson Jr. buying Michael Jackson paraphernalia, blah, 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 blah. And go read from the second he stepped in as a member of Congress, Aaron Schock was using his campaign fund, decorating his office.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, according to the indictment. And it just, you know, how do smart people do such dumb things? That's what I don't get.
Aaron Schock, I mean, he was such a promising figure,
he
too.
He was a darling.
And he was everywhere. He's going to be the next governor, maybe even presidential material someday. And he's like, he's a common grifter. He was like just one detail that I just loved. He was buying Super Bowl and like World Series tickets. I guess at face value somehow, and then he was and writing that charge off to his campaign account, so the campaign would pay for that, and then he would sell them then on on StubHub at the inflated price and pocket the money. I mean, what a common crook! I mean, this is allegedly. I remember the other thing I was going to say, and that's I would hope that Trump, what I'd like to see is I'd like to see him include at least one Democrat in his cabinet. I know that, you know, Obama did that. It's been sort of a tradition. I think that would be an important signal.
Ray LaHood, yeah, go ahead.
My recommendation is to go onto Facebook. I think it's only on Facebook. Mary Schmeek had a really interesting column, really well-done column that was set to run on the front page of the Tribune on Wednesday morning, talking about Hillary Clinton's historic victory, and it's Mary Schmeek at her absolute best. It's a terrific column. Of course, it never ran, but she posted it on Facebook, and it's a moving story. It's not particularly partisan. It talks about, you know, one of the details she talks about how she, you know, her mother died a few years ago. She put on her mother's coat, went to the polls. I mean, it's a beautiful column. It's too bad it didn't run. So.
My recommendation is the New Yorker, the one that I referenced earlier, November 14th. And on the financial page, they talk about how important it is to name a company correctly, the sound of it, the letters you choose, the history of it, what does it evoke. And do you know what the signature piece is in this, Eric? Do you know what they talk most about?
No, but I'm thinking the Mincing Rascals, maybe the worst name for a podcast in America. Like, go ahead.
Tronk.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
It's really, really interesting. And they say that almost in every way, that's a terrible name. And, you know, and then they have other examples. It's not all about Tronk, but it's mostly about Tronk. In fact, the cartoon that goes with it is a ship. And it shows somebody christening it with a bottle of champagne, and it's the SS Tronk. And as they hit it with the champagne, they bust the whole ship open. So it's an interesting piece and something worth reading.
Just for the record, Kristen and I vehemently disagree with
you. Right, that's a little salt in the wounds. Why don't you read the whole article for us now?
Hey, you know what else we didn't talk about? It was Jake Arrieta and some members of the Cubs tweeting out, and other, you know, people who shouldn't get in the game.
Well, Jay Cutler also came out at a news conference yesterday.
I just think, boy, I'm with you, Kristen. Shut up. You go be the president. You go be the pitcher. You go be the quarterback.
You go be the actor.
Sure. Let's just all go live our lives.
We don't care if you're threatening to move to Canada or wherever.
That's Steve Bertrand. You can hear him on WGN Radio. Thank you, Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. I'm John Williams, WGN Radio 2. Thank you to our producer, that's Kristen Decker, and to our engineer. Is that Bob Ferguson over there?
Is
Benji doing it today? Thank you very much, Bob. Drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.